welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I really hate getting sick. Obviously, I'm still somewhat under the weather, but it's going to be this way for a while. And this is just because where most people would be, you know, back on their feet 100% within about a week or so, especially the scale of this virus that I ended up picking up, it was hardly anything. But when you don't have a strong immune system, then you struggle and recovering and getting over, you know, some of the symptoms. Anyway, enough about me and enough about, well, I don't think I've ranted enough about how I hate getting sick. I hate losing time. I hate losing traction. I hate it when something needs to get done and I can't get it done. And that's why I really, because when you're sick, that's it, you're down. I mean, everything stops and sometimes things deteriorate. And I'm sure everybody can attest to this. I mean, you may have been doing something at work, you know, and there have been politics involved. And while you were gone, the political forces that have been trying to do differently, maybe not necessarily opposing you, but trying to do differently, you know, succeed in, you know, convincing people to go their way or what have you anyway. And it's always something. And I just hate getting sick. It is the testament of the nature or the flaw within our bodies that we have these types of things. But I believe that one of the greatest lessons that most people should probably be able to surmise out of, you know, your ailments and what have you, is the fascination, or I should say the beauty in the design of the human body, that we have such a thing called our immune system and the way it functions, you know, without us even really knowing. And I mean, unlike any other animal or any other species, I mean, even though there are several species out there that, you know, have the immune system and so forth. But I mean, if you look at, you know, how we are clearly in his image, because we have the cognitive power to look at, examine, and understand what basically is harnessed within us, the power and the simple beauty of mankind and every individual person, regardless of, you know, your circumstances of how you've been born. We're all cut from the same DNA. And it's very humbling to understand that we have these opportunities. We have this beautiful body that is capable of teaching us so much. And some of the most important things that I hope that everybody learns is discipline and restraint. It is a very hard lesson for anybody to understand and learn. And I think everybody struggles with whatever, because we all have. And anybody that is in the graying term in their life, that when they, you know, are of that age where you start recognizing your downfalls, you start recognizing, and hopefully long before you've recognized most of your serious downfalls. And what a blessing it is to be able to seize the assistance in overcoming whatever those shortfalls, whatever those weaknesses are. Anyway, As I'm trying to return back to work, I've got a whole bunch of emails I haven't even touched, and the few that I have responded to by now, you know, will probably help people go, oh, okay, well, at least he's alive. But I do want to say this, that I understand, I'm very appreciative of the prayers. I'm understanding of the support and so forth. And it's just, it's always humbling. I don't want to necessarily go down this path, but it always really bothered me, you know, when I listened to, you know, anybody like Rush Limbaugh. And I know he's just a revered person in, you know, talk radio and in, you know, the conservative talk movement and all of that. But it was a guy that, you know, really had a lack of humility, somebody that was, you know, talent on loan from God. Who would say that? I mean, you know, what kind of, anyway, I just, where is his humility? I mean, if he even had any, he should just be thanking, you know, thanking the good Lord and acknowledging, you know, the blessings and opportunities he has. But anyway, I believe, because, you know, look at what America gravitates towards. They gravitated towards his arrogance. Look at Trump. Look at how the conservatives of America have gravitated towards his arrogance. I am here to tell you, if James Madison, because I, you know, most people don't know James Madison. They didn't know that this guy had health problems that had stricken him for his entire life. As a matter of fact, I forget what it was, but he had a digestive problem that when he would travel, a lot of times he'd have to stop because his digestive system would just go haywire on him and, you know, he'd be debilitated with, you know, I'm just going to say probably diarrhea and that type of stuff. And it was just like when he was traveling to Princeton as a very young man, and this was the very early on in the standing up against Britain before the Declaration of Independence, you know, and he was a teenager at the time. And he wrote in his journal that he just prayed that he would be able to contribute somehow to America because he wasn't a big man. He, you know, he actually, because of his health and everything else, he was a very small man. And but he was very smart. The one thing he had time was he learned and read. He was America's, and I say this without reservation, he was probably America's most literate man. And one of the reasons for that is that while Thomas Jefferson was in Europe, every book he purchased to put in his library that he ended up selling his library to Congress after Congress was burnt down in the War of 1812, and John Adams sold much of his library as well. They both, you know, were kind of re-communicating together, and after D.C. was burnt down, you know, they both contributed their libraries, or actually they sold their libraries to restock, and it was pretty extensive. But as Jefferson sent books home, before Madison would get down to Montpelier, or not Montpelier, it was Monticello. Madison lived in Montpelier. And as he, you know, got the books, he would actually read the books and then take them down. And so almost every book he got, he read through. And he was definitely a very, very literate man in reading all of these different books that Jefferson was sending back from Europe. And so Jefferson definitely, you know, ached to read many of those books. And as a matter of fact, after he retired, some of the time he did spend, he actually started spending reading some of those books, but he was still a very, very busy man. And it just, if I look at Madison and I look at his humility, there were points in time in his presidency, and I would encourage everybody to get to know these framers. I'd encourage everybody to, you know, to kind of go through the biographies and so forth. And when you read about Thomas Jefferson, there's just so much about this man that anybody would love. And, you know, he was that good of a man. As a matter of fact, it was well noted that when he learned about because obviously they had their biases with blacks and so forth, and he didn't think that blacks could possess the intelligence. So when he actually met a mathematician black, I think it was either Pennsylvania or somewhere in the north, and he was just absolutely astounded with the fact that he goes, okay, so, you know, his belief that their brains were different, it was absolutely wrong. And here was a person that was capable of changing, you know, and acknowledging that he had the wrong bias, he had the wrong paradigm. And he was absolutely fascinated with the poetry that was written by another black. I believe that person was in Pennsylvania. And so it wasn't that, you know, these men didn't have, you know, preconceived, you know, ideas and preconceived, you know, how they viewed the world, because they did live, just like you and I live, in a time where we have preconceived, you know, biases. And they may not be as racial anymore, but back in those days, you know, people did live different lives and different cultures. And when you saw somebody different, you knew that they were different somehow. And so everything that you discovered that proved that they were different just reinforced the fact when all along we're far more alike than we're different. But anyway, we'll be right back after this promo. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I can't say enough about Madison. And as a matter of fact, if you do study the framers, you're going to find that George Washington, during his presidency, now, I've mentioned this before, that prior to the Constitutional Convention, where Madison was doing everything he could to, you know, grab and pull strings throughout the Republic in getting a convention started. And there's no doubt in my mind that he had this vision of a new form of government, which was why he came up with the Virginia Plan. And there's no doubt in my mind he was touched and inspired to, you know, to do these things. And as I talk about arrogance, as I talk about people who, you know, are just, this is what they want to do, this is how they want to do it, and, you know, they got blinders on, you know, like a person with talent on loan from God and wants to brag that they really, you know, that's where it came from. I believe his talent was developed. I believe that he was a smart guy that learned from his lessons, and he became very good at what he did, and he became an artisan behind that microphone. Now, whether God had something to do with that or not, probably, but to actually look at how that man's life ended and look at the problems and troubles that he had because he got himself so, I mean, in his own mind, he was at the top of a mountain. Folks, it's always better to keep yourself in a low place and not deliberately low where you can't thrive and you can't be successful in doing what you need to do. But you need to always be humble. Yeah, you need to always acknowledge that, you know, everything really does come from him. And if you do, I mean, the blessings are just, they will overwhelm you. Anybody that understands the pure love of Christ would truly understand how overwhelming one person can get when, you know, they actually walk in faith and they receive the strength and blessings to continue to do more and more. Anyway, so when you look at what James Madison was doing prior to the Philadelphia Convention, and all his involvement in the Virginia legislature, I mean, everybody was just looking at this guy as this kid, and he was a kid, and He was working with George Mason. He was working with, you know, all of these different brilliant minds in Virginia. And as they came into this convention, as he started actually working as a delegate for Continental Congress, I mean, I don't even think he had served in Continental Congress yet. And as he was working as a delegate, going to a few of the state conventions. And what I mean by that is they actually had these meetings, and it was in Annapolis where they finally determined to have the Philadelphia Convention in 1787. And it was Madison who, you know, went through this long process of trying to get people to realize how this Articles of Confederation was failing and how we were literally going to break up and the Union would be completely vulnerable. And if you really think about it, you know, why was this man being so moved? What happened in 1790 that really made a huge difference of America being a stable nation to being in shatters with the Union failing? And here I'm telling you, folks, in 1790 was the French Revolution. And in 1790, a despot rose to power named Napoleon. And I am here to tell you, if America had not been paying and started paying its debt and honoring its debt to France, had America not been formed, or this United States and the Constitution not been formed to where America was now capable of actually sending money and repaying France and their other debtors, there's no doubt in my mind Napoleon would have, you know, got his navy and forces together, and the first place he would have focused instead of going towards Russia would have been right here to America. And then he would have divided and conquered, and he probably would have, you know, got with Britain and Spain and everybody else and says, hey, we want this section, you guys can have the rest. There's no doubt in my mind that that's where we would have been facing absolute tyranny here in America had we not had the divine intervention and the inspiration of individuals like James Madison. And so as I look at all of the things that James Madison offered, and I think back at that young prayer, that young man's prayer, Lord, I wish I could contribute something to the cause of liberty. And I those aren't even his words, but it was that humbling. And because he just saw, you know, his inability. It took him so long. When he had to travel to Princeton, he had to leave long in advance. And as a matter of fact, anybody that goes through the ratification debates, you'll notice that there's an absence of Madison. I think he was out for a whole week during the ratification debates because he took ill. Because his digestive system, I forget what they used to call it something. There was an old term for it that, you know, that was just common, that when people would just get ill. Anyway, I'm not prepared to talk about these things. And as a matter of fact, the reason I even started bringing all of this stuff up is how humbling it is. You know, when you realize, you know, what you're doing and how important the stuff is, and you go, I just hate losing time, and I hate, you know, being sick. And I can probably just imagine how much Madison hated and how much he felt he missed. And I, you know, I look back and I go, wow. I mean, what did that guy not do? And when I look back and again, as I've told you, go study the framers. The most important person, as a matter of fact, the guy that wrote most of George Washington's letters and correspondence while he was president of the United States was James Madison in his first term. And Washington, you know, really did revere James Madison until there became a division between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton to the point to where we saw this huge divide where George Washington basically, you know, he made the huge mistake of taking sides, and he took Alexander Hamilton's side. Why? Because Alexander Hamilton is a man that George Washington knew the longest. And there's no doubt in my mind that Alexander Hamilton, even after he was outed for his adulterous affair, there's no doubt in my mind that Washington probably regretted the fact that, you know, he was in this position with Hamilton. And so I know that when Washington stepped down from his presidency, he kind of really disassociated with most everybody. I mean, it was just like he really retired. And I think that that was one of the reasons why, you know, he died so quickly after, you know, his serving. And so when you kind of look at, you know, most people, you know, you'd think that he would have lived another 10, 15 years, but no. He took ill and he died rather quickly. So if you look at Madison and Thomas Jefferson, if you study Thomas Jefferson, you're going to find that Thomas Jefferson was constantly, because he wasn't even around when the Constitution was written. He understood it to a good degree, but there was many times that he didn't understand and would basically rely heavily upon Madison of what to do. And so when it came down to the Louisiana Purchase, it was Madison that kind of helped him realize and understand that it was a treaty, but there were some problems and limitations. And there's no doubt in my mind that based on what Madison had told him, he felt moved to write that amendment to the Constitution. Thomas Jefferson did. But that amendment was never considered. I am telling you that for everything that was done by these men, from the amendments that never got passed to the things that actually they did do and they successfully did, it all stands as a testament of what this Constitution was and what was supposed to have happened. And so there's no doubt in my mind that when we look at our apportionment for 30,000, you know, one representative in the House of Representatives for every 30,000 people, the only way to change that number is to amend the Constitution, which is why James Madison wrote that amendment that never got fully ratified. All we have to do is ratify that amendment then, folks, and we will actually displace the House of Representatives and actually be able to seize control again, because right now, when you keep it small, you keep it all. It keeps your costs down. I mean, look at how much we're doing the globalists a huge favor by limiting how many seats they have to pay for. They don't need to buy all of them. They just need to buy enough and have enough influence and coercion over enough of them to, you know, basically have the controls that they need. And they do have their controls. And so anyway, as we go into this break, just ponder with me real quick and think about this. What a stalwart, what a champion Madison was. And remember, he had a plan going into the convention, and I'll touch on that when we come back from the break.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here's a guy that, you know, came up with this plan. He got the convention. He convinced, and if you remember me saying this, it was a letter to George Knox, I believe, General Knox, at least. I don't know what his first name was, but it was a letter to General Knox, because you know me in names. And as a matter of fact, I got to just go on an aside. I was having a conversation with Paul Venable, and you know, he's known for a long time, my challenges with names. And I forget what we were talking about or what it was, but it was just like, you know, he's surprised that I couldn't remember a name. And so I just say, really, you? You know, how many times have I told you? I'm just terrible with names. Anyway, so back to Madison. Madison sent off this letter to General Knox, and General Knox became convinced that he needed to help Washington clear his plate to attend this convention. Because at that point in time, George Washington was really looking, in investing into an aristocracy. It was called the Society of Cincinnati. And actually, it had nothing to do with Ohio. It was an aristocracy type of social club that Washington was considering joining. And I think Knox was a member of it. And he said, you know, put aside your interest in this right now. The country needs you. And one of the things that was kind of, you know, a precursor to this was the Shave Rebellion. And I think because Knox was from the New England area or from the north side, and he basically says, look, this nation is going to be torn apart, and we're going to be left not being able to pay our debt. And, you know, these sovereign states are going to be put underfoot by Europe or by the crowns of Europe. And so these men, you know, understood, and Knox wrote a moving letter that actually convinced Washington to join that convention. So again, it was Madison's influence to convince Knox to do that. When I look at all of the things that we have right now with Republic Review and everything that needed to be done, I find Madison close to every part of this, from the resolutions, you know, to the Constitution, the remonstrance on religion. I mean, there are many, many things that this man contributed that is just, you know, I cannot not acknowledge the fact that he has probably, and that's one of the reasons why I look at Madison as the exemplar. And I look today, and I go back to this when I talked about how America looks at people that, oh, you know, if you're not arrogant and you're not out there, you know, boasting and puffed up like Trump or like Rush Limbaugh, getting people to follow you is difficult. But they have to follow you not on your persona. They have to follow you on your substance, on your content, on the context of your character. And so that's what a true leader would do. And Madison was a true leader. And I'm afraid, my friends, that if Madison was here today, he would definitely not be, you know, able to get America's attention. So I think it requires humility from all of us to try to, you know, put aside our self-interests and our differences and humble ourselves to start really asking the real essential questions. What is it going to take? What do I need to do? And it really does come down to this, because I've ran into a lot of people over the course of the last 10 years since I wrote my book. I published my first book 10 years ago, and I've ran into a lot of people, and there are still people out there that are opponents to everything that I'm doing because they stand for something else. They stand for, you know, this controlled opposition, you know, John Birchers or what have you, because they've never been able to prove me wrong. I'll never forget some conversations I had with the Western regional manager of the John Birch Society, who's retired, and how that man has never come back and said, you know what, you were right. And he can't prove me wrong. But why is it that people have this such a stubborn inclination? Now, back to Madison. When we were going into the break, I said, you know, just look at Madison and how he was truly, truly a blade of grass that just thrived in the rainfall and the sun. You know, the trials and the rests in what the Lord was giving him, even though he had his frailties and, you know, his lack of continence, you know, his weak body. You know, he's one of the, I believe he's the only president to actually lead troops in battle. Only sitting president ever to do that. And so, you know, because the War of 1812, I mean, I do remember when Monroe was the one that, you know, kind of made sure that Madison got away. But, you know, later on, and during that 1812 war, Madison actually led troops, you know, to fighting the British. I mean, America, look at America at that point in time. Could you imagine Biden leading anybody or even Trump? No. But these guys did everything they had to do to defend liberty, to make sure that this experiment, this innovation that God blessed them with would thrive. And they answered the call. What do we need to do, folks? We need to answer the call. So again, going into this convention, Madison created this Virginia plan. And instead of it being presented as Madison's plan, Governor Randolph looked at the plan and goes, I like it. I think this is a solid plan, and I will present it as the state of Virginia. Now, remember this. The states were supposedly, you know, as the John Birchers will tell you, the states were opposed to, you know, this federal convention and this federal constitution, that the states, you know, did not give them this charter. Now, hold on here. Virginia walked in there with an idea of creating a whole new government. The governor of Virginia presented a plan of creating a whole new government. Now, do you think he deliberately, Governor Randolph, deliberately decided to go outside the commission? No. He felt that this was what was necessary and met the requirements of the commission. So this goes back to that long age-old, you know, the resurrection of an argument that was settled back then. Those who were opponents to liberty and the freedoms under this Constitution that wanted to maintain some level of state cabals and state control and maintain their little fiefdoms of power, those are the ones that constantly try to do their little damaging scuffs and smears on the Constitution. And so I don't think, and I believe that the John Birch Society has really positioned itself between the rock and the hard spot, telling people that the convention was a runaway convention and that they exceeded their commission. And Mr. Brown has a $10,000 reward for anybody that can prove that they did not exceed their commission. And as a matter of fact, I would just encourage Mr. Brown to read Pauline Mayer's, because she's the one that actually wrote this long before, you know, I could step forward, because she documented it in the ratification debates of the Constitution in her book, that the conventions actually settled this argument that they did not exceed their commission. Because every state that tried to come down that path and say, yeah, the only place that it was arising was where the anti-federalists were trying to protect their little fiefdoms. And they went away, you know, still smearing and still, you know, the sour grapes, Fox, right, of Aesop's Fables. So they were constantly, you know, yammering, oh, well, you know, that's an illegitimate constitution. And that's what the John Birch Society is taking. They're taking that side, and they're taking wax at the Constitution. As they try to tell us, oh, well, the Constitution's a great thing, but, you know, it's illegitimate. It can't be both, folks. And it isn't both. It's really clear that it was more than necessary to do everything that these men did in preserving the Union and building a confederation of states, in delegating very, very limited and very, you know, confined powers into this federal government, and then leaving the residual mass of powers to the states and the people, respectively. So anyway, when we come back, I'm going to ask you, What do you think Madison felt when his plan was rejected?
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I have been in a lot of conflicts on ideas in engineering and in the Marine Corps regarding strategies. As a matter of fact, I argued with a general, and after I argued with General Zinni, and I think to this day, you'll probably, if anybody knew Anthony Zinni, you could ask them if, you know, Mobley, if the name Mobley sounds familiar and talking about a Korean strategy. And, you know, I argued with him in a briefing, and you don't want to get into the details, but because some of that stuff was classified. But the fact is, I was telling him, you know, the very specific dangers of, you know, why, you know, this area was not a tenable area. And during that point in time, with some of the limitations that we had, it would have been very treacherous. Anyway, long story short, I was pulled to the side, and I was basically told I'd never brief the general again. And it wasn't because... and as a matter of fact, this was my job. This was my responsibility to basically do the academic research. And, you know, Zinni's job was to be the leader and to take whatever that information was. And so as it was perceived between General Zinni and myself, because we lifted weights after this. And, you know, there was definitely a mutual respect between us. But when people see somebody, you know, trying to prove a point to somebody that's not as a subject matter expert, which I was the subject matter expert of this area, and when when Anthony Zinni, you know, was basically making some decisions and some of the, you know, comments and so forth, I felt it was important that I provided him the, you know, the further information and so forth. And because that's my job as a subject matter expert. And you want to make sure that they, you know, they have the full picture and that they understand this. And so he, you know, I don't want to say he was dismissive, because he wasn't. Because he actually, you know, It was all done respectfully, but, you know, and as a matter of fact, when I was told by my major that I would never be briefing the general again, you know, the major couldn't say, oh, well, you know, that was absolutely, you know, irresponsible and rude and disrespectful and, you know, anything like that. It was, you know, I can't believe you took, you know, took such ground. And I was going, I'm only providing the information on, you know, what I know. And he goes, well, you're never going to brief the general again. Okay, well, that's fine. You know, then you have to find some other subject matter expert that basically will do what they're told to do instead of doing what, you know, their job is to provide the information. Anyway, so when we're out there, I know what it's like to, you know, say, okay, it's not my decision, but here's all of the information you need to understand. Because not everybody understands the nuances. And when I mean the nuances, you know, geographic terrain and everything else, I mean, most people, especially officers, they're not specialists. They're generalists. And so anyway, when Madison presented and when Governor Randolph presented the Virginia plan, anybody that had pride in authorship, anyone who had pride in authorship, would have actually just said, you know what, you know, if it was Hamilton's plan, then Hamilton would have gone to his deathbed defending that plan. And Madison, when his plan was rejected, it wasn't like, you know, he lost, you know, like everybody was throwing rocks at his dog. It wasn't like, you know, people were trying to personally insult him. He didn't personalize it. And here was a man that actually, in working with everybody else in a forum of collaboration and in a spirit of openness, here was a man that absolutely was receptive to the inspiration of the whole. In other words, all of the inspiration that was pouring in. See, the Virginia plan was flat out rejected. Then the New Jersey plan, which was basically looking and retaining the Articles of Confederation, both were rejected. And it was the Connecticut Compromise that where the one guy that thought out of the box, and probably the one man that is least recognized for his brilliance in giving direction to the Constitutional Convention, was Roger Sherman. And as a matter of fact, as Keith Broders, my good friend at the Constitution Club down in Florida now, is, you know, likes to point out to people that, you know, Roger Sherman was the one man that actually signed, you know, all four documents, governing documents. And so the Articles of Association, the Articles of Confederation, the Articles or the Constitution, and I believe he also signed the Declaration of Independence. And so, you know, that's a lot. And when you're in this room of all of these people, I mean, these are, you know, at this point in time, folks, there was maybe this mutual respect, but nobody was bigger than anybody else. And they were all humble men who had no inclination. They had no, you know, I'll call it, they had no pride in ownership or authorship. They were trying to preserve the Union. And they, you know, some people, you know, there are those in the Patriot movement that claim, you know, the sovereign citizen movement, that even the Constitution is suspect, that the Freemasons were involved, and, you know, that it was basically a, you know, it was a red herring, that they were doing something completely different. And I'm going, you know, there's no there, folks. There isn't. As a matter of fact, some of these folks asserted that we were, you know, because we were paying off our debt, you know, to some British banks and so forth. They said, oh, well, that was, we were paying the crown. No, we actually had some debts to Britain, to the, you know, some banks there, just like Dutch, just like the French. I mean, we had all these different debts, and we were people that honored our debt. But we didn't pay the war debt that Britain wanted. We never did. And we never would until they convinced us otherwise. And Britain sent right after the Civil War, after the Organic Act, is when Britain basically got people within the United States government to sell us out. They had no authority to do this, and everything that they did was fraudulent. And everything that they've done can be completely undone. Because what really matters is what we understand what our real government is and what it can do and what it cannot do. If you understand those things, then there's no way you can accept the illegitimate form of government as it is operating, because it is illegitimate. So anyway, I wanted to make this episode really focused on, you know, what Madison was and what he really contributed as a man who saw no opportunity for himself to contribute to this republic, for him to be able to you know, provide anything to, you know, in the cause of liberty. Everybody's bowels were filled with the desire to further liberty in America. And I believe that that is alive today. It is just being misplaced in the wrong people. It is being given to those who don't deserve that trust. Folks, we have to start really measuring whether, you know, this person deserves, you know, the focus in our time. What we need to do, and so we're going to be covering, as we go into the ratification debates, and I'll just tell you right now, if you go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, and you just go right above the Red State Talk Radio podcast, that is a page where you can find all of the ratification debate documents, all of them. And so what we're going to do is, as we cover one of the debates, like when we get into the first one, Delaware, and or however we go down these, what we'll do is I'll put the link to the absolute, you know, that page that you'll be able to read that document. Because as I read through these things, and I've realized that there have been quite a few people that, you know, would love to read along with these things. And, you know, they can listen, and then when they get home, they can, you know, take the time to dive into these things. And some of the things that you can do, you know, because these are HTML pages, right? So all you got to do is just control F and do a find or a search for a particular word. And voila, you're now finding, you know, exactly what I was reading. And so this way you can read along. Now, some of these debates are pretty intense, like the Virginia and the New York debates. So as we go through these things, we would encourage you to read these debates, because as I tell you, the debates are the scriptures for the Constitution. If we look at the Constitution as a divine inspiration for governing mankind, then as they debated these things, it was clearly all done as the proponents for the Constitution clearly testified what that Constitution really meant. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.